When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello, everyone. This is Kathy Hackle, your host for Tech Magic, the podcast where we talk about all that is happening in technology, from gaming to fashion tech to avatars to AI drama and everything in between. I am thrilled to be joined again by my guest co-host, Lee Keebler. Lee, how you doing? How was your long Thanksgiving break?
Oh, I think I'm with every, like, I mean, that guttural was very real. I'm going to be full until I think Christmas.
Until the next big meal. Yeah.
It's turned into this holiday where it's like you have your Thanksgiving, but then all of your friends want to have Friendsgivings and it just keeps going.
Yep.
I gotta lose some friends. it's just too much.
Oh my gosh. I love that though. That's great. And did you stay in Portland?
We did. It's been an amazing, normally this time of year, like the weather is crap. Like that, that part of the whole, it only rains in the Northwest is kind of true during November, but, it's been awesome. We actually went camping and we went
that's
to see
great weather then.
Yeah. It's been fantastic. Yeah. It's been wonderful. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, our weather was not as great in the DC area. It was still a little cold. A couple of days were nice. We had a really good time, really great time hanging out with the kids, did tons of activities. We were so busy. Like, it's not even funny. Yeah. And I'll share some of the stuff that we did this weekend because it was super fun and it relates to one of the stories we're going to be talking about. But I will say one of the things I noticed on the socials this week was Kim Kardashian doing dancing to Crank That from Soulja Boy with her daughter Northwest.
Superman song.
The Superman song that my daughter corrected me on. So I started playing the song and then I told my daughter, I was like, hey, my 13-year-old teenager, right? Hey, look what Kim Kardashian's doing. Maybe you and I should dance on TikTok. And she was like, Mom, that is like the worst punishment you could give any kid right now. It's like, I'm going to dance on TikTok. So for all the parents out there, if you have a 13-year-old or, teenager that gets in trouble, you should just say, keep doing what you're doing and I'll start dancing on TikTok and follow all your friends. So yeah, that's something funny
amazing.
That happened.
It's amazing how like those punishments have changed over the years. Yeah. Because there was a time where it's just like, I didn't want my family on social media. Now everyone's on it and it's just the thing. But yeah, it was just, please don't comment on my wall. No, I'm not going to.
No.
I'm not going to put my aunt in the top 8 of my MySpace page. Like, that's just not going to happen.
It's like, stop tagging me in that photo dump of, all these pictures from Auntie so-and-so. Oh my gosh. But you know what? So when I was growing up, and you might have had the same thing. So we still had landlines, right? So you still had to talk, like you had to be sitting down somewhere. You might have been on the bed, but you were like plugged into the wall. And I remember it was like, we'll take your line away. Like if you misbehaved or you're getting punished.
Oh, you had a line? I didn't have a line. My parents were public school teachers. We didn't have line money. Like, no, we had one line and that was it. That was for internet everything.
Internet everything. That was it. Well, at some point you upgrade to getting your own line, right? But we'll take your line away. It's like, oh my gosh, it's like your connection to the world, right? So yeah, like I think about my kids now because my daughter finally she went from the flip phone and she got an actual iPhone just this week. So we're navigating that. I gave her a contract. This is crazy. Like I wrote, I'm serious on this stuff. So like I wrote this whole contract. I had her read it. I said, you know, okay, laid it all out. These are the rules of engagement. This is what you got to follow. And then literally when she was reading them, she was like, Mom, I don't think I want the phone anymore.
Like, so you can use the note app and you can
weather, clock, alarm. But yeah, she was so funny. She was like, and then my son who was right next to us, he was like, make sure you read the fine print. I was like, now, whoa, Colin. I mean, goodness.
That does remind me. I did do one thing with my phone over weekend that I thought was interesting and I think fits into the show. So for many people, iOS 17 rolled out to their phones. And so I upgraded to iOS 17. And then I spent some time playing with the personal voice, the voice print. Very interesting. I don't fully understand their use case because I can't do things with it that I want to do, like get rid of the Siri voice and replace it with my voice print. Like you can't do that yet. But as I talked with a few other people, I actually talked about this with my wife, is like, because she's understands tech in a way that I don't, coming from her marketing background, and she sees things that I don't always get in like my LinkedIn feed.
Before you keep going, I do want everyone to know that I think Lee's wife is so much cooler than Lee.
Like, she is.
She's my favorite. I'm not partial. Like, literally, she's my favorite. So anyway, I just want the record to show.
Yeah, and she thinks about this stuff completely differently. She kind of is able to see it in a different light. And she pointed out, like, no, this is really important for people who, because it takes 15 minutes to do your voice print. It's a lot of reading. It's not an insignificant amount of reading. But she's like, yeah, but people are using this to bank their voice if they're losing access to their voice. And she brought in like a lot of key things with like people who were been diagnosed with like ALS and things like that, which had never crossed my mind. So it's very interesting to see Apple dipping their toe into that very specific use case of AI. So if you haven't tried it, it's worth playing with. It's kind of interesting to hear your voice read things back to you that is not you. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to do that. I didn't get a chance to do it, but I do know Siri is due for like an upgrade.
Due for an upgrade.
So, yeah, she's needed an upgrade for quite a while. But yeah, I do believe they're working on Siri X or something. By the way, you have another request. Oh, sorry, Siri.
Okay.
He's listening. Down. Sorry, Siri. No, you know, AI, please don't kill me in my sleep. I promise I'm good. Oh my goodness, you're listening. But so good stuff. I'll tell you a couple of really fun things. We were really busy with kid activities the whole time. We went to the movies because I'm a big movie person. If anyone listening to this podcast already knows that, like I'm going there all the time. I still go to the movies. I enjoy it. We went to see the new Disney movie, Wish. Theater was almost empty, which is not usual for a Disney movie. My youngest one really liked it. My two other kids were like, ugh, this was not our favorite. So that was really interesting. They thought there was too much singing, which was interesting as well. And I think it didn't do that great in the box office. So
yeah.
We'll have to see. So we went to the movies. I also took my younger kids to the Kennedy Center, the Performing Arts Kennedy Center here in DC, for a live performance with these puppets for Bluey. So Bluey is this show on Disney. It's like,
Bluey, I don't even have kids. I know who Bluey is.
You know Bluey is. Yeah. Okay. Bluey's like, yeah, cha-ching, Bluey. Yeah.
Disney took Bluey to the bank. You know.
Yeah. So that was super fun. And it was live entertainment with all these puppets. And it was just beautiful. I have to tell you, like, because I went there like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so boring.
Is there still like, so your kids, are they still engaged by basically a puppet show, a live puppet show in the modern day of like wondrous technology? Is that still a thing?
It was
like,
beautiful. I was engaged. I mean, I was totally into this. I was laughing, smiling, playing along with all the stuff, like all the little games that they had. And activities, my kids and my older, like I brought my son and then my youngest and a little friend, and they were all super engaged. I mean, every kid, all the parents, most of the parents, I'd say, and every kid in that room was having a blast.
That's my theory. Everyone thinks that everyone's attention span's gotten shorter. And I think it's just like, no, we just need better entertainment. Like just effort does count for something, I think, a lot of times.
Well, it was beautiful to see the puppetry arts, like on stage. Like it had been a long time since I've seen like puppets that that were really cool, not scary, right? Yeah. So that was beautiful. I mean, the kids, there was a part where they come out with all these like birds and they're flying, and I don't know. I mean, I had a blast. They had a blast. We really enjoyed it. Even my 11-year-old, when I took him, he was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this, Mom. This seems like it's for little kids. And he actually enjoyed himself. So,
that's,
you know,
awesome.
Live entertainment. That was great. Another really cool thing we did, and this is going to lead us to our first story. We went to the Lego Discovery Center in DC that just opened. It says Lego DC, but it's 12 miles from DC. So you're like, it's not really in DC. It's in Springfield, Virginia, but it's okay. It's okay. We had a really good time. I mean, especially my son, he's really into the architecture sets. There was a master builder guy there. They got to talk. He's looking at all the sets that he wants for Christmas and everything. And then when we're coming out, the exit is through the store.
Exit through the gift shop every time.
Exactly. They get you there. So he's working on his Christmas list, all the stuff he wants, and taking pictures. And then there's this wall where the kids can, you know, put Legos up. And for some reason, someone had written, you know, but with the little, you know, Lego pieces, wrote Fortnite. I was like, oh, interesting. I took a photo for some reason. Right. And then just yesterday, was it? I can't remember. Yesterday,
yeah,
or the
it was
day
like
before,
yesterday. Yeah.
I sent you that screenshot of Lego posting, you know, they're teasing something with Fortnite, because they had an image of the llama.
And, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone's like speculating, like, what's going on? So I was like, does someone at this Lego store or someone that came through know something we don't? Who knows? Maybe someone just really liked Fortnite and wrote it there. And they probably don't even know what's happening, but there's a lot of rumors in the rumor mill in the gaming world about Fortnite times Lego, Lego and Fortnite partnership kind of coming to fruition in the next couple of days, maybe?
It seems like it. It doesn't seem just like fortuitous. It seems like this has been a while planned, and everything points towards building blocks. So it looks like they're building something, which is kind of just amazing, because you've got Roblox and, you know, they got some back and forth beef with Lego, and Lego's, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go to Fortnite, and I'm just here to watch it. And then you just got Minecraft sitting in the background like, yeah, we're doing all of it with none of y'all. So.
Minecraft's just eating popcorn. Yeah. They're just like, okay. I don't know. So I don't know if there's any beef between any of these people. What I do know is, like, obviously Lego and Fortnite had announced they're working together a long time ago.
Yeah.
All those sorts of things. So that shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. But obviously we don't know, right? We really don't know what's going to happen.
No.
So people say December 7th. We'll have to see.
Be curious where that number has come from. Like, that's a very specific date, and I haven't seen too much pointing to that, but I did see it. Like, yeah, that does seem to be the date. I don't know where that leak came from, but okay, let's wait and see, I guess.
Well, and there's some gamers, some Fortnite players are talking about it being a completely whole new game. So we'll have to see. I mean, I'm excited. I think anything Fortnite and Lego is just makes sense. They're both building, like, they're for builders.
Yeah.
So I just love that combination.
Yeah. And Lego is the original user generated content, right? Here's just a bunch of pieces. Go build.
And if there's any Lego sets that are Fortnite Lego sets, I mean, that would be amazing. I think that would be fantastic.
Oh yeah.
But who knows?
There has to be.
Yeah.
There has to be.
I sent you something also related to Fortnite and Fortnite Creative, right? So not the Battle Royale side, more the user-generated content side, about an interview that I saw on LinkedIn from Navik, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, with a company called Creator Corp that works on Fortnite creative games. And, you know, of course, you and I, both our teams, have experimented, you know, with Fortnite Creative, with work around creating things in Fortnite for brands and companies. We're working on a really cool build right now, so I'm excited about that. But there was something that in the interview, and the reason I'm sharing it, is that this Creative Corp group that does builds mentioned that surprisingly, their team found that the most important thing driving discovery is not the quality of the game, but rather the conversion rate of the thumbnail icon on the Fortnite right. discovery page. That kind of like that piece of information, it's what they found. It's their data, right? I don't know if it's true or not. Like, but I thought that was really interesting because that puts a lot of weight on a thumbnail.
It does. So, I mean, I obviously can't confirm that that's the case, but if you're looking at like how a brand would monetize any of this type of thing, the time spent playing is often a piece of data that doesn't get registered as highly as a value as unique, you know, interactions or unique visits. And so you can see games that tout millions and millions and millions and millions of visits, but the second that you start digging deeper into that data, if that data is even ever made available publicly, and you see really low player engagement of time spent in game, that leads to a lot of logical questions of, well, where's that engagement happening? And a lot of times that can just be, did you get the click, right? Which is basically the same issue that a lot of advertisement has online in general. Is like, if you build a website and it's covered in ads and I accidentally click something that I didn't know was an ad because I thought it was going to lead to something different, and it opens it up and I immediately close it, was that ad effective? I would say no. But are they going to bill for it? Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of, I think, very similar to what we're seeing in this particular space of like, depending on how a lot of these financial agreements are written between brands or even with Epic themselves, I don't know. You know, if it's based on click-throughs, well, then that's where you're going to focus it. You can see this on a lot of platforms where you see people try to build really crappy worlds. Like they're basically cardboard cutout stands, but they rip off popular worlds.
Yeah.
Facade.
Or popular maps or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just in the thumbnails themselves. And sometimes it's just trolling and kids being weird and goofy because that's what kids do. And sometimes you just kind of wonder, well, what's really going on here? And I'm not pretending I have an answer. And I'm just, this is how I've seen the industry roll out in the last couple
I just thought
years.
That piece of data, if true, right, it's a very interesting piece of information, right? And I think you're going to see, in my perspective, my suspicion is that in 2024, you're going to see even a bigger push from Fortnite for people to, you know, use Fortnite Creative and create more and more user-generated content. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone, right? But I do think it's probably going to happen in 2024. So,
yeah, and I'd like to see like more user tools available to be able to expand even further. And they've done a great job with implementing, you know, Unreal into the engine. That just, to me, that actually took longer than it should have. But I'm glad that it's finally here because those are where you start getting into real building tools. There's still platforms out there like VRChat that have infinite creativity because it's just like build whatever you want in the engine and build it. I want to see there really come about something like that for Unreal, which would be a lot of fun.
So staying on the Fortnite train, I shared this news with you that I saw that Fortnite's actually launching a pair of glasses with Oakley. I think there's two styles. I'm not sure. Did I share that with you? Did I send that to you?
No, I didn't see this.
Oh, okay. So
this is news.
Yeah, they're launching. I think it's two styles with Oakley. And I mean, super fun that they're launching, you know, fashion. Like,
man, Oakley came back out of nowhere. That brand just like, I don't know what they did, but they were nowhere. And then they came back hard. Boom. I've seen them everywhere lately. I mean, good on them.
Maybe that's TikTok. Have you been checking if it's really hot on TikTok? Because I feel like that's where all the signs are pointing.
I've never been on TikTok.
Ever? Like you've never?
Ever. I've never.
I mean, I'm not like a super active user, but I have a TikTok account and I'll go there sometimes. Like, I'm not like on it all the time, but you've never actually been. That's interesting. Wow. Okay.
And I don't know if I just like hit the some like age bracket where I've just turned into grumpy old man who's like, ah, that's for them kids. I don't need to go on the TikTok. It's not for me. Like, I don't know. But it's just not ever appealed to me. I technically have an Instagram, but I don't take, like, it's just not my thing. I probably should do more with my Instagram. I just don't.
Well, I think once you have your novel, you're going to definitely, you know.
That's what everyone keeps telling me. They're like,
book talks are a big deal. Well, you can always hire someone to do it, like, right? It doesn't have to be you.
Yeah, that's good.
It could be a young Gen Z alpha kid who does it for you. So,
yeah. One of your kids looking for a summertime, like, online job. There you just
go. Oh my gosh. But speaking a little bit about TikTok, I was reading, and I shared this with you as well, that ByteDance is, I mean, major layoffs in their gaming
business. ByteDance is. They're just facing it right now. And I don't really know what is going to come, because we even seen stuff from their hardware division, like the Pico headsets have had a hard year. And I don't know if they pull through or not. The jury's still out. We don't know. Let me be very clear. That's not a dig at Pico. I think they make amazing hardware. They've had issue after issue just because of, like, foreign affair things between the US and China and the trades markets that are above my pay grade, you know, getting hardware into the US. So, like, it's tricky. We're going to have to see what happens. I am disappointed to see their entryway into gaming get a little stalled.
Yeah. It's very sad. I feel like the gaming industry as a whole is facing, I feel like every week it's layoff after layoff after layoff, even though it's a thriving sector, right? In some ways, it's had a rough year in its own way. But,
well, I think it's a lot of people who, a lot of like large companies that were like, you know what, we should get into gaming. And this isn't the first time we've seen this. Mm-hmm. So the world experienced this in 1982, 83, like right around when I was born, where
I was going to say, like, what?
I'm just a weird historian 80. When it comes to this stuff. Yeah. Like, we did see this before. There was this video game crash of the early 80s. And a big part of that, proponent of that, was companies that had no business being in the gaming sector just all decided they were going to go out and start making video games. And they were horrible. Like, they were just bad. At one point, and this is not a dig at the brand, I'm a fan of the brand. They're often my breakfast. But at one point, Quaker Oats owned an Atari publishing video game company. And they actually, I'm dead serious. It was called US Games. And they produced like half a dozen to a dozen video games for Atari. And it was owned by Quaker Oats. Wow.
Was it for cereals or for like Quaker Oats products?
No.
Wow.
No. US Gaming stood on its own. They just happened to be a subsidiary of Quaker Oats, and they released all of these video games for, you know, in the early 80s. You know, Purina Dog Chow had an Atari game out. Like, everyone was doing it. Was Shovelware City before we knew what shovelware meant. And I do kind of feel like we're tiptoeing back towards that. And so now a lot of these brands are like, oh, we don't actually know how to make video games. This isn't for, I don't know. We're kind of seeing that kind of play out.
You know how I feel about this moment is, like, at one point, every company was a tech company, right? Every company, no matter what they were selling, was a tech company. I feel like we're at that moment where, like, every company's a gaming company, right? I feel in some ways like they're all like, we're in gaming. We do this or we do that. And you're seeing, I mean, it makes sense to me. Some companies, it makes sense. Like, a Netflix has tons of IP. Makes total sense that they brought Mike Verdu in, like, to lead gaming. They're testing out all types of gaming formats.
They know how to stream content.
Yeah.
They know the networking, right? Like, they have something to offer, technologically speaking. A lot of these companies don't have something to offer, technologically speaking. They're just like, we're going to make a video game company. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
So it's not that easy.
Yeah, it's definitely not. And I'm definitely seeing that. So I feel like it's that, you know, every company's a tech company. And now everyone's like, every company is a gaming company. But I do think, like, Netflix games need to get a little bit better. Some of them, like the Love is Blind game. Some of the games I'm just like, I don't know if this is my thing. But because I mean, I guilty pleasure, I watch I watched Love is Blind. I watched The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. Sorry, people. Sorry to disappoint y'all. That's
I
like
think we all knew this. Pleasures. I think secretly there was no question. I think we just all assumed you were into The Bachelorette. Like I just
I watched that. I'm sorry. I watched it forever. It's the one thing. It's the one thing where it's like everyone's like, you watch that? That's like, I was like, yeah, you know, if I want like a no-brainer entertainment, like, yeah, I'll watch that. I'll have fun with it. I've watched it for years. So, but
it's,
yeah,
it's amazing the things that you find out. Yeah. No, I mean, there are shows that I'm super into, like the Great British Bake Off.
Oh, there was just a big elimination. Did you cry? Yeah. They just had a big elimination.
I mean, yeah, they did.
Yeah, well, someone like I had my friend the other day, like I just saw her this weekend for Friendsgiving, and she was like, her and her husband watched it, and they were like, one of them was crying.
It's still just
I was watching
baking,
The Crown. Okay. I was crying during The Crown, but that's a different story, right? But yeah, some of the Netflix games, I mean, I get them having this amazing IP extending into immersive experiences in the physical world. Yeah. Pop-up stores makes total sense. Extending into gaming. I mean, they got to push this IP further. Gaming makes sense. Yeah. It doesn't make sense maybe for some other. But yeah, Quaker Oats having a gaming studio is kind of shocking.
Yeah, shocking. I at one point I talked to them about something else that we were like recently, like within the last couple of years, and I brought that up and they had no idea. And I'm just like, are you kidding? It's part of your legacy.
It's part of your history. There's not a plaque at headquarters. Oh my gosh. Well, okay, so here it is. Here's the question: future or fad? Every company being a gaming company.
Oh God, I hope it's a fad. It won't be. It won't be. This is the dystopian, you know, cyberpunk future we're all hurtling towards, because eventually they're like, every brand's going to go to AI and say, make me a video game, and it will be great and it'll be super addictive and you'll never,
leave the Quaker Oats video game.
That's right. That's right.
I don't know. That would take a lot, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'll go to the Post cereals, you know, video game. I don't know. Anyway, so I'll say it's future-ish in some ways. I mean, every company I talk to, every brand is thinking about gaming. So maybe not that they're a gaming company, but they're all thinking of like, what does gaming mean for us? And their
I think partnerships.
Networks, so.
I think brands finding partnerships in established games 100%. I think that where we see a lot of it kind of break down is if that brand then goes out and says, I want to make a video game ourselves. It's happened. And we've seen it be successful in the past. It's just rarer. It's just harder to see that. I remember like 7-Up when I was a kid, they had a video game, The Spot, Cool Spot, I think is what it was called. Hmm. It was on Sega Genesis. Loved that game as a kid. Like it was a massive hit. It was for, you know,
I was too busy talking on my landline.
Yeah, you just had your second landline.
I was too busy talking on my landline, okay? I'm going to flex that one, okay? All right, so moving on, I want to talk about some of like hardware news, stuff happening in the space. I feel like, you know, lots of stuff happening in the gaming XR kind of scene. So a few things I wanted to talk about. Humane, who we've talked about, had a Black Friday sale. They actually sent me a $30 off. For Black Friday, which I thought was interesting. I was like, is this a good thing or is this a bad signal? I don't know. And the CEO, the co-founders did a live Instagram, Q&A, like a live Insta with people. That was interesting to watch. So yeah, you know, the jury's still out on Humane. There was an interesting article. I think it was the Wall Street Journal or New York Times. We'll have to post it, that talked about gestures and what you and I talked about, like, having one of those devices, you have to learn new gestures, right? Yeah. And for example, it was like, if you do this, you have to tap twice, all those sorts of things. So there was this whole, I think it was The Information. We'll find a link and post it, but talking about gestures. And it reminded me of when I was working at Magic Leap. It was fascinating. One of my favorite things was walking in the office at HQ in Florida in front of the gestural lab, right, where all the gestures were worked on, the names were created for the different gestures and all these sorts of things, right? Because you're manipulating things in space.
Right.
So yeah, like it reminded me of that. Like any thoughts on Humane's gestures in general, maybe?
gestures in general, I mean, it's a part of like the human experience, right? We give gestures on a daily basis, whether it's a high five or a middle finger, right? Like they all have some meaning and express something, and elicit a reaction. I started in gesture recognition. I think it would be called computer vision now, but like I called it gesture recognition back in like 2011. For those who don't know, my first foray into technology and building it was I built a DJ rig because I was a DJ back then, you know, two turntables and all that. But it used gesture recognition to control the sound effects, reverb, echoes, filters. You know, you get that whoa, whoa, whoa sound that was really popular during the EDM craze of like 2012. But it was all in, it was very much like Mickey Mouse Fantasia. As I moved my hands, the whole sound changed to the point where people thought when they would go to a show that it was choreographed. Like there were,
oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Because it was so, now it seems like, duh, okay, this is every day. But back in 2011, no one's doing this. So it was very mysterious and people weren't sure if it was real or not. I actually spent some time with Imogen Heap, an artist who some people out of the UK. Some
she's super great. Didn't she have these gloves where she did all
she
this?
She was building, the gloves. Yeah, so you know, I spent a day with her like going through her when she was first building like the prototypes of those gloves. We talked through that and how gesture recognition works, because I took a different approach, right? Mine was all based on effects and she was doing notes. And then we got into this theory about people thinking about sound on a scale and why the theremin doesn't really work as an instrument. Like it just, it was all
well,
over
the
map.
Conversation with her. I mean, she's like an artist, but a philosopher.
Oh, she's a genius.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, my goodness.
She's you want to talk about an amazing mind in the music and technology
and
space.
Technology,
and she just keeps going. She came up in a conversation during a Thanksgiving hangout that I had, where a friend of mine just had a baby. And I guess Imogen came up with a song. I'll have to go look this up because this needs
for
to, this might be a, it's mathematically created to get babies to stop crying.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing.
and my friend swears by it. So like, I need to go do like this conversation literally came up like last night. So I need to go do some research because it definitely sounds like a From the Fringe article that we need to do. So that's all I'm going to say about it. All that to say, yes, I think that as things like the Humane Pen come out and we'll see other technology, new gestures are going to become secondary in nature and was kind of part of the parts that worked with even like Google Glass with like the side scrolling and things like that led to tapping and being able to control on your earbuds. And you know, it's just how do you interact as simply as possible?
And I think like Apple, for example, is leading the way there on making it very easy.
Always
like the double tap idea. And concept, making it as easy
slide
as possible.
Slide to unlock.
Yeah.
Like slide to unlock. Yeah. The early iPhone was nothing but gesture. Yeah.
Because I'll be honest, like as an early HoloLens user, Microsoft HoloLens user, I hate the pinching. Like it got to a point, because when you, for people that are listening, when you're using the HoloLens, at least one of the original, the first versions, you had to do this little pinch with your fingers. And like
and
these gestures,
register.
And it got to a point where like my hand was just like, I no, this just doesn't feel natural. I mean, those things are evolving and getting better. I feel Magic Leap was a little bit better on the gestures, right? And the gestures all had names, which is interesting. Naming them is, there's a whole architecture that goes into this world of creating these gestures, and so I think there's a lot there. The article that go ahead.
Who I'm really impressed with when it comes to like trying to figure out these unique gesture situations. And I think we're going to see this when the Vision Pro comes out because it's all gesture based, but we don't know what to expect with that yet. VR chat to prepare, I believe, and this is all speculative, but I believe it's to prepare for the Vision Pro, but also knowing that the Quest 3 has really great hand tracking. They have already implemented a completely gesture based system to going through their games, which means no
That's
controllers.
Interesting. Wow.
And I was really questioning when I saw the Vision Pro first come out, like how do you play a video game and traverse, you know, a level, right, in 3D space because you don't have joysticks. How do you, no one wants to like run in place. We played with that in like 2016. It's horrible. So
Gertwix, I think that's what that was called. A machine that you ran in place. Yeah.
The big baby stroller that he strapped on. That was horrible. I'm sorry. It wasn't good. So VR chat really already has implemented this, and it's hard to explain over a podcast. So I'm not going to try, but they basically have a very intuitive way of getting people to control, and it's comfortable. You don't get tired. You're not constantly keeping your hands up in the air. It's in a very good relaxed position where you're controlling basically as a joystick with your hand on one side, and you've got five or four different tap to do a function on the other hand. So
there's
it's
be,
funny where you're seeing
gonna
some
gonna
of this
universal,
research come in.
Some type of universal way to do the tapping where everyone does it the same. Like just like a lot of us use the phone in the same way. That's got to happen at some point. In the article, the reporter was talking about how like he doesn't believe the gestures are going to work, that, you know, he doesn't use any of the gestures for his devices. But I think, you know, when you look at the future of hardware and AI wearable that's coming, you know, with spatial computing, mixed reality, like there's got to be gestures in there. It's a natural way to engage.
So. I mean, these are the same people who said that they wouldn't abandon their Blackberries because who wants a phone without buttons, right? Like, it will get there. It's not there yet. I mean, it wasn't so long ago that touchscreens were basically sci-fi. And so we had to create, as technology changes, you get new ways to interact with those pieces of technology.
New interfaces, new ways. I mean, the mouse was revolutionary, right, when it came out.
I mean, they said touch tone phones weren't going to catch on and like back in the rotary phone days. So I don't listen to those people. It's just, you have to adapt.
So one more thing related to that before I do Fad and Future related to gestures. I'll say this. So Varjo, who's a Finnish company that's really, really advanced high-end mixed reality headsets, they just released the XR4, which is the starting price is $3,990. It's much lower than its predecessor, the XR3, which was $6,495. So when people complain about the Vision Pro, I'm like,
Varjo. With the subscription. With a subscription. It's that number that you just heard with a subscription.
I have demoed. I know the folks at Varjo. They've got a, you know, headquarters here in DC. They actually invited me to a happy hour a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, man, I should have gone. They were probably demoing this privately. I didn't, you know, I haven't demoed the XR4. I have demoed the XR3, which is amazing. I mean, the natural eyesight, like, I would normally need glasses sometimes to read certain little letters or something. When I wore the XR3, like I didn't need glasses. So when they talk about this new headset being as good as natural eyesight or better, I believe it. I've seen the XR3 before. Totally. I cannot wait to try the XR4. This is top notch and everything. Thoughts on Varjo? Can they compete? You know,
I mean, we don't know until we see what Apple rolls out. Maybe in the high end, you got to get everything perfectly right, enterprise solution space. Like, but even then, it's interesting when you start talking with a lot of these enterprise companies and really start boiling down what their problems are. It very rarely gets to a point where it's about fidelity.
It depends. So they have a Varjo does a lot of work here in DC in defense. And depending, if it's medical or defense, I could see why you would need specific, like needed to be very, very, like very high fidelity, like 1-to-1 or even better, right?
Yeah. Well, I've got a couple of things that I'm thinking of in the back of my head that I just can't say due to NDAs. I mean, is there a market for it? Yes, I think there's a market for it. Am I the market for it? Probably not. To be completely honest, and yes, I will get one because it's my job, but if it weren't my job, would I be in the market for a Vision Pro? Probably not. Not the first one, at least. I think that this is definitely going to follow that pattern of very expensive, establish your developer base, and then release the one that is still expensive, but comparatively, you don't think it's expensive because good grief, the first one was really so expensive.
It was worth it, though. It's amazing. One of the most amazing devices I've tried. I mean, the Vario XR3. And I can't wait to try the XR4. So if my Vario friends are listening to this, please invite me to HQ. I will come over and demo that puppy. Talking about that, you know, and I really can't talk much about it. I can mention that I'm going because I've seen people post about it on LinkedIn. But as many of you guys know, both Lee's team, you know, and the team he's working with and my team, Journey, we're all developing, you know, exploring how to develop for the Apple Vision Pro, which is it's not easy right now. I have to say it's a pretty pretty time-consuming, interesting process, to say the least. But my team and I, one of my engineers and myself, are heading to Apple Developer Labs this week. So I'm very excited. I won't be able to talk much about it, obviously. But I am truly excited to be able to do this. It's funny. I'll say this, Lee, before we go into fatter future. Whenever I talk to anyone, they know a lot about me, about, you know, my podcast and the content I put out. But I don't think they realize that I'm actually in the trenches, like working on these things. Like, you know, I have very, very limited technical knowledge, but I have some. And I'm in there trying to figure these things, right? Trying to figure out Xcode, doing all these sorts of things. So I'm not just, you know, I like being in there. I like building when it's hard. So like going to Apple, I'm so excited. I went to Apple Park a couple weeks ago, but going to Developer Labs is just like for me a dream come true and a big challenge. So very pumped about it.
I mean, I know you won't be able to say anything on air, but we're going to have a call when you get back. I want to know.
Apple company, Apple company in Cupertino. I'm not talking to anyone. Don't worry. I'm super excited though. I'm thrilled. We're working already with a couple of brands and companies, and I'm all about the spatial computing revolution that is upon us. So, anyway, before we head into spatial computing, which is going to be our next topic that we're going to discuss, let me ask you, is the future filled with gestures? Are we going to control our technology with gestures? Future fad or future? Future or fad? Yes. Thumbs up. Future.
See, yeah. See, thumbs it doesn't up. Go well no on, a pub, on a podcast.
It's going to happen. Future, I mean, for me. Future,
that's like me. Asking if like emojis are going to be in the future. Like, yeah, for a while. Yeah, it just is. I don't know why, but yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, according to my kids, definitely emojis. Yeah, they criticize my emoji game now. I'm like, oh my gosh, I knew you feel old when your kids are like, Mom, that emoji is cringe, right? So I'm like, Mom, stop using the happy face, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, what? I thought it was being cool. Like,
just take it back to the emoticons where it's just all ASCII text. Like that.
They probably wouldn't even know what that is. They're like, Mom, what is this? What are these squiggly lines? What are you trying to say to me? I don't know. I don't know, but. Anyway, now going on to spatial computing, some really cool things happening here. So I used to work at AWS, Amazon Web Services, and every December, right after Thanksgiving, sometime after Thanksgiving, it's November, December, depending on the year, they have their big conference called AWS reInvent in Vegas. That's been happening every year. It's by the time this airs, it'll be happening. Lots of interesting folks over there. A lot of AWS, you know, clients and companies. And my friend Allie K. Miller, who's an AI influencer, is over there right now covering things. She's doing great work, so follow her. But yeah, from a spatial computing perspective, they've got a few things going on, the spatial computing team. They've got some sessions that they're going to be having. So I'll read some of these, the titles, because I thought this was fascinating. One of them is deploying deploying photogrammetry and 3D models in the cloud with reality capture, deploying NVIDIA Omniverse Nucleus on AWS. There's another one that is about Emirates using spatial technology to hire and train the next generation. That is probably going to be fascinating. Then this one for the geeky people out there that love data, this is going to totally resonate. Build a spatial data lake with visual asset management system in order to unlock the value of spatial data. I mean, oh my gosh, like data lakes, visual data lakes. Like I think visual data is going to be a massive part of why spatial computing is adopted. And then this is my favorite one. It says getting started with applications for Apple Vision Pro and AWS. So it says in this talk, spatial computing specialists guide you through the toolkit needed to build applications on the new Vision OS ecosystem for the forthcoming Apple Vision Pro using Amazon EC2 Mac instances. So
interesting.
Really exciting. Interesting thing.
There's a lot to unpack in all of those. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that they're still pushing the photogrammetry side of it. I worked a little bit on that when I was at Intel, and it's such cool technology to be able to kind of like, the goal is to stream, right? Yeah. To stream photogrammetry for those who, it's basically 3D content, but not like a 3D movie. It's like a live model. And it's just very difficult. It's surprisingly very similar to how we stream. We did early streaming with pixels. Now it's with voxels, but it's just super heavy. It's interesting to hear that they're pushing that. And that's one of the areas. Cause I think that is a form of entertainment in the wings that the world hasn't quite discovered yet. That'll be very interesting. That's going to change a lot.
Yeah. It's an evolution, like an evolution of, you know, the still image to motion picture, all those sorts of things, right?
It is the next anymore. Yeah, it is the next evolution from movies. Because it puts you there.
It's volumetric, whether it's photogrammetry, right? Whatever it is in that spatial context.
Yeah.
Right. It's gonna unlock these opportunities for new ways of creating entertainment. That make use of our spatial world and our, you know, our spatial nature. So
and if you're capturing like a sports team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you can see from all angles and you can go on the field and you can see it as, and then you just replace AI over the referees and get rid of the refs. I'm there for it. Like, you want to know where, well, you want to know where AI can do some good.
Aww. I know people really have like a thing with the referees, but like, I don't know. Like, I like the human referees. I would keep them human. I'm team human in that one, Lee. I don't know. I'm team human.
I've seen a couple calls where I'm just like, no.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But so, yeah, I mean, I think spatial computing keeps heating up. It's interesting. So the Harvard article that came out got great feedback and everything. It's interesting because still I feel like people still are so obsessed, that's the right word, and rightfully so. Like, I don't want my AI people to misinterpret what I'm saying, but I feel like people are really obsessed with AI right now, and rightfully so. Like, that's what everyone wants to talk about. But from a longer term vision, like, for me, in order for us to truly engage with AI beyond like our screens, it's got to move into some type of spatial format, some type of AI wearable. So like, my 2024 is, you know, my biggest obsession for 2024 is thinking about the future wearables, of these AI wearables that are coming, of spatial computing, spatial computers. Like, this concept of understanding
wearables,
spatial computing is about AI.
So. Yes, but spatial computing, not that it couldn't be, but it hasn't been turned into a boogeyman.
Good
so
point.
It just, it doesn't get
it
that
hasn't hit
press,
the hype cycle. So, yeah.
Right. You know, now there are definitely in spatial computing there, I can make it a boogeyman. There's privacy concerns. There's cameras everywhere. There's all types of things that I can boogeyman about this. But, you know, it's, we've been conditioned to look as humans, to look at AI as the inevitable technological boogeyman from early media. Like, this is just how it is. So, you know, it is the Frankenstein's monster of technology in a way. And I think we're all freaked out by it because we've been planning on being freaked out by it.
Well, it's interesting because all the OpenAI coverage that came afterwards, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but it was like, they saw something that scared them or blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, one day when the Netflix show comes out, we'll see. we'll kind of know what really happened, but not really.
No, we won't. No, we won't. We'll never know.
We'll never know unless we were there. So I don't know. But I want to go into talking a little bit about an article that came out this weekend that really spoke to me. It's in The Guardian. It's related to AI and the role of women in AI, working in AI. It said, where are all the godmother? Hold on, let me say that again. Where are all the godmothers of AI? And it talked about, you know, women's voices not being, you know, heard. It talked, for example, about OpenAI's board being replaced by all white males, no women on the board. That's been a big criticism that's been made. Maybe they'll change that and rectify that. But as someone who was, you know, who was given the moniker, the godmother of the metaverse, I always wore that and I still do very proudly wear it because there's no king of the metaverse, or there's no, you know, the godfather of the metaverse is considered Neil Stephenson, right? So I love that there was a godmother, you know, myself, they gave me that title. And then that there was the queen of the metaverse, which is like Paris Hilton used that. But I haven't seen that in AI. And there's so many amazing female voices in the space that this article I thought was really interesting. I've seen it shared all across my social, like my feeds. Everyone, you know, everyone's talking about these and how there's, you know, so many amazing women in the AI space. You know, why haven't we seen a godmother of AI? Like, we need one.
Well, what would your assessment be? I think you would be the very first person I would ask that question to.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of the companies that are working, and I don't know, right? I know a lot more about the space you and I are in, right? That is more like the gaming space or the XR space or some of the metaverse space, even the Web3 space. I know more about the makeup of some of these companies, more so than AI. The AI companies that I know, most of what I've seen is a lot of male employees, right? And not all of them, you know, not all of them white, but a lot of male employees. And that's been interesting. What I've seen is that women, for some reason, a lot of the women have been the ones that have said, hey, something might not be going right, or we should have more ethics, or, you know, and it's interesting because some of them are not even doomers. Like, they're just saying, hey, I think we need to have, you know, temperature checks, or we need to have those, you know, checkpoints. It's not even that they're doomers. It's just that they're, I think, realistic and saying, hey, we need to check some of these things and see how they're going. So I don't know. I'm trying to make sense of it. Like, I wish the godmother of the metaverse wishing for the godmother of AI, you know, to be crowned in some way, because I do think we need a lot of female voices. I mean, the CTO of OpenAI, who became the CEO shortly, Mira Murati, I think an amazing leader. I mean, Fei-Fei Ling, like, there's a lot of amazing women, but why hasn't, I don't know. I want to see more of them.
You know, I think, I don't know if there's really even a lot of men's voices in AI. There's a lot of men building it, and everyone knows the name of Sam Altman now, but that's because of what happened. I don't think that there, even prior to everything that just happened with OpenAI, it wasn't like Sam was the poster child of AI to the common person.
I think that, I don't know. Like, I feel like he has become that.
He has. Oh, definitely.
That person, right?
Definitely. So. But a big chunk of that has been boosted because of what has transpired in the last couple of weeks, right? The whole concept behind AI and having a voice is the fact that AI itself has the voice. And I wonder if that's not playing into it. I also agree with you that I think that if you have reservations, there's probably some silencing happening because people are just trying to move it forward as fast as possible and figure out where the business use case is, because where's the dollars? That's not necessarily what we should be doing right now. So I don't know.
I want more women to be recognized. And there was an interesting article that Forbes published and said 10 women that OpenAI could add to the board. So we'll include that article as well. I want to see, you know, I want to see more women. And that leads me to part of this story, not related to OpenAI, but related to a conference called DevTernity. That this is baffling. Like, this just shocked me. This conference actually was putting up fake female speaker profiles to boost the perceived number of women speaking. So there's like a woman called Anna Boikio, who does not exist. Like, she was created with AI. They had her as a speaker. This is controversial. Like,
yeah, no, that's
this is a bad use of AI. Like no,
that's not controversial. That's lying.
That's lying. Good point. That is not controversial. That is lying. It's horrible. I was like just shook that this event would, you know, generate fake female speakers to try to like even the numbers. Can't you just
the end game here? Like, if you show up to a conference and then like all of the women just canceled when you, I don't understand
I don't
how
know,
you
know, but this just
That feels like something's missing. Something about that story.
It's either someone messed up really bad. Like, I don't know. Like, it just gave me the wrong, like, I was just kind of like, why? Why do you need to do that? Why couldn't you just invite female speakers? There's plenty of women that work in the space. Anyway, horrible, like horrible use of the technology. What not to do with AI?
So here's a question. You do a lot of conferences. You do a lot of public speaking. Let's say hypothetically, and this is going to lead to something else, I promise. Yeah. Okay. So hypothetically, you get called and there's two major conferences and you want to be at both and you can't be at both. And let's say it's 5 years from now and AI is caught up with it. And one of the options is you could just have an AI of you do the other conference. Would that suffice? Would you be okay with you going to one conference and then your AI goes and does the other conference?
Yeah. Because I would have it trained on who I am and my thoughts and, you know, my work.
Okay.
That's very different than a random, you know, person that does not exist showing up.
Totally.
No. Totally. I mean, it would be, I would have control over my own AI. I would have trained it with my own thoughts. It would be kind of a surrogate of who I am, a part of who I am at that point in 5 years. Right. So no, I have no issue with that in the future. What I have an issue with is creating fake female speaker profiles.
Totally.
100%. Because you want to pretend you have more female speakers. Just get the female speakers. There's so many women.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So this might be news to a lot of people. They might not know that this happened, but yeah, we'll include a link to the story because I was just like, this is insane. And
Where I was piggybacking that is, I think you saw the article with James Earl Jones.
Yes. Tell folks about that.
So evidently James Earl Jones, who's the voice of my entire childhood, and also Darth Vader, as if anyone didn't know that, has agreed to allowing his voice kind of be voice printed for Darth Vader to continue on because he's gotten to a point where he's like, I want to pull back a little bit. And he didn't like officially say he was retiring or anything like that. But, you know, and evidently he's already done this. This has been in play and we just didn't know it. At least I didn't know it. It was used for one of the Disney Plus a series that had Darth Vader in it. That's James Earl Jones's voice, but it's not him. It's his AI voice print. And it's just one of those rare instances that we're starting to see where the artist is saying, yes, I see a use case for this. I don't want to do this anymore, but I will allow this to be licensed and you can continue to use my voice likeness. Now, who knows what type of amazing deal that is because there's only one James Earl Jones. but yeah, that was one of those rare instances that I saw an artist, an actor, say, you know what? I see positivity in this technology and we can come to an agreement for this.
I love that.
Darth Vader will continue. and that to me is awesome.
No, I agree. So fad or future? Future or fad here?
Oh, it's 100% future. Yeah. We're there. I just as we were talking, I was like, wow, I could see someone training an AI to become a parenting app so that when a kid has to like get advice and you're not like, who knows, rather they're on the school bus. It's just, it can go in so many weird directions. There's going to be so many strange new apps for this type of thing.
Yeah. Like, well, we'll have to see what happens, but, I do want you to go and do some field work and find out about the Imogene Heap song and see if it.
I will. I'll pull that
crying. You should be like, can I come observe your child?
Yeah. I'm very curious. I want to go look up this because my friend swears this song works. Like,
that's amazing. I want more details on that. So yeah, we're going to go on break. But after the break, we are going to have an amazing interview with Zoe Skaman from Bodacious, a strategy studio. She is an amazing mind. I love Zoe with all my heart. And we're going to be talking about a lot about gaming, about community, about niches and everything in the multiplayer brand. It's something that she talks a lot about. So let's go to break. And after that, Zoe Skaman.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Now I am joined by my dear friend, Zoe Skaman, who is one of the people that I find the most interesting out there, especially on LinkedIn when it comes to content related to community, to Web3, to the future of gaming, kind of where this is all heading. So Zoe, welcome to Tech Magic.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So for folks, a lot of folks do know you, but there might be some listening to the podcast that, you know, this might be the first time they're hearing about you and the work you do. Can you just give folks a little bit of an idea of who you are, what you're doing, what you're passionate about?
Of course, yeah. So I've spent about 22 years working across innovation, brand, entertainment, sport, all of those different worlds. And over the last couple of years, I've been running my own strategy consultancy, which pulls all of those different threads together. So where I tend to operate most at the moment is looking at what's coming over the horizon in terms of emerging technologies, future scenarios, all of that kind of stuff. And I've spent a lot of time delving into the worlds of fandom and how that's changing, user-generated content, democratized creation tools, and all that exciting stuff to hopefully get a grasp on what our near-term future is going to look like.
Fantastic. And I kind of want to start talking about one of the things that I feel like you're such a fantastic expert on. So you spent, like you mentioned, the last few years studying, you know, generative fandoms. How are new creation technologies, you know, such as AI and the gaming engines like Unity and Unreal, impacting how, you know, folks behave, how fandoms behave, and what they are building?
So fan fiction, fan art, kind of the idea of fans as, you know, generative communities has been around, you know, forever. So if you look back to, you know, the days of Trekkies, for example, they would write speculative fiction about how, you know, Captain Kirk and Dr. Spock were actually in a homosexual relationship together and, you know, all of the adventures that they went on. And so that kind of stuff has been around for ages. You know, 50 Shades of Grey was born out of Twilight fan fiction, etc. What we're now seeing, though, is they are being given new creation tools. And so we are giving them generative AI, which is allowing them to not only think about new pathways into narratives, new character development, that kind of stuff at the sort of the turn of a fingertip, all the way through to new visualizations of what these worlds and these new characters and, you know, their take on the fandoms might actually look like. And we've already started to see some of it. There was a brilliant kind of small project that was released probably about 2 weeks ago. And there was a young girl writing about Timothée Chalamet. And she had written a fan fiction romance all about Timothée Chalamet. But not only that, she had used DALL-E to actually then create images of herself and Timothy going about their adventures. So, you know, having romantic walks on the beach, you know, him meeting her parents, that kind of stuff as well. So we're now able to almost color in between the lines of where previously we would have had to make it up in our imaginations. Now we can see it, you know, we can actually sort of feel it come to life in different ways. And the same is true of the kind of more, I suppose, world building creation tools. So things like Epic, things like Unity. And what we're starting to see, you know, with things like Unreal Engine is people are able to kind of build these fantasy worlds. They're actually able to build, you know, recreations, for example, of IP that they love, but also kind of put their own spin on it as well and allow others to then experience their vision, you know, through their eyes. And so I think what we're going to start to see is more and more of this fan fiction stuff come to life. So we're going to see tangents on different IP. We're going to see, you know, different stories come about, you know, different character arcs in terms of what if scenarios. And it's going to be really exciting. The only downside is obviously going to be IP creators may turn around and say cease and desist, as they have always done throughout the history of fandom. But I also think there's going to be more and more of them opening up to the opportunities in this space and actually saying, you know, where are these fans going to take it? Could there be, you know, new nuances that maybe we haven't considered? Could there be real merit in allowing them to go on their own adventures and to explore their own narratives? And where could that lead us as IP owners in the future?
And that's a really interesting point, because I just took my son a couple weeks ago to see the Five Nights at Freddy's movie. He's a big fan of the franchise, you know, indie game. I took him and a whole bunch of his little friends. Like, they're all, you know, Gen Alpha. they loved the movie. They were like, when's the number two coming out? Like, they were having all these theories and all these like tangents that they were going into. And it was just beautiful to watch that, right? To watch that kind of fan fiction being created right in front of me with the kids. So I love what you're saying, because I think that there is this moment where brands have been so used to saying, you know, season, this is, don't use my IP. But I feel like now they're starting to be like, well, there is a co-creation opportunity. There is a chance. And that leads me really well into the next question. So in some of the talks, you've been traveling around the world. You've been doing some really amazing talks. You have been recently writing and talking about the arrival of what you call the multiplayer brand. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What is the multiplayer brand?
So I think what we are starting to see with these new tools and with, you know, a generation being trained on creation as play, is more and more of them are saying, I don't want to sit there and have a brand passively advertise to me or passively show me content that I'm supposed to sit there and enjoy. I want to be a part of it. I want to participate in it. I want toolkits. And, you know, we're seeing that already happening in Roblox, for example, in Minecraft. You know, we've got this generation of younger kids who are building as a form of play. You know, they're creating different outfits for their avatars. They're creating games themselves. They're creating worlds. And in some cases, they're spending months and months creating these little universes, only for three of their friends to come and play it for 2 weeks. And then they give up on it and they move on to something else. But that idea of creation as a form of play is being really embedded in terms of their everyday and what their expectations are. And so when they come to become, you know, consumers, so in their teens, in their sort of, you know, early 20s, et cetera, that expectation is still going to be there. They're not going to be able to sit there and passively say, I'm just going to watch something or I'm just going to experience something without myself actually having a role in it. And so I think more and more what we're going to start to see, which we're already starting to see with some brands, is them actually providing those toolkits and saying, here is a level of creative freedom. Here is a brief for you to go and explore within certain parameters. You know, we're seeing it with Nike's Dot Swoosh and basically allowing creators to create their own virtual sneakers, you know, actually having their 3D files and then saying, go for your life, create whatever you want. It can be realistic. It could be crazy. It could be physics defying. It could have flames coming out the back of it. We're seeing it with Lego World Builder, where Lego are turning around to their fans and saying, create the next big franchise for us. That could be a video game, it could be a movie, it could be an IRL set, you know, all of that stuff as well. And I think we're going to see that opening up of brands more and more so, where they start to really recognize, you know, the creativity and also the commercial value of allowing their fans in, as opposed to keeping them at arm's length moving forward.
Well, it's interesting because that leads us into this, you know, world of co-creation, right? Where it's no longer the brand just speaking down to the fans of that brand or that franchise or that IP. It's more like having an actual co-creation, you know, collaboration relationship. You were one of the experts that we interviewed for a study we did with the Harvard Business Review Analytics Service on Generation Alpha. And I know you and I are very, very, you know, very keen on understanding this younger generation that's still being born. What are some of your thoughts around Generation Alpha? Because you mentioned, you know, they're world builders. They use these world building tools for play. But what are some other thoughts? And we're going to include a link to the report in the show notes as well, and any links, you know, to any of your talks as well. But what are your thoughts around Generation Alpha? Why do companies and businesses and brands in general, even governments, why do they need to pay attention to this new generation that's coming down the line?
I think mostly it's because they are already engaging in a lot of the behaviors that maybe our generation wouldn't have until we were much older. So, you know, we are seeing them, for example, going on protest marches in Roblox to free Palestine. And they're doing that because they're too young to actually hit the streets, but they're not necessarily too young to have a voice and to actually know where they can actually put that. And so I think that, you know, their power and their agency and their ability to actually make a shift and make a change is happening so much younger than it was previously. So when we talked about, you know, Gen Z, for example, and we got really excited about what their possibilities were, we weren't really paying attention to them until they were about 16, 17 years old. They became quote unquote proper consumers. But these kids are already consuming. You know, they are already buying Robux and they're already buying, you know, virtual avatar outfits, for example. They're already buying their way into games. You know, the microtransactions they're doing in all of these gaming worlds are massively significant in terms of the amount of money that they're spending. And it's only a matter of time, you know, before they start to dictate more of that when it comes to their parents. I think it's also because they're learning how markets work and how to be entrepreneurs. So I've recently finished a massive study with the Walton Foundation, who are some of the biggest spenders on philanthropic education in the US. And then working on that white paper at the moment, but some of the research that came out was mind-boggling. So 25% of the kids that we interviewed under the age of 13 are actively selling their creations on Roblox Marketplace. You know, they are literally children under the age of 13, but they are selling their creations. And it's incredible to actually see that. The other thing is that they're so aware of what these games and what this kind of creation as play is giving them. And they talked a lot about the soft skills that they're learning. So collaboration, teamwork, perseverance. These are all skills that we desperately need to instill, not only, you know, in our children, but also in ourselves. We don't know what's coming down the line, you know, in terms of, you know, the future of work and actually what the gigs are going to be. But the soft skills are going to be there regardless. And I think what's really interesting is just their awareness of this, even at the ages of 7, 8, 9 years old. They are aware of the fact that these games are kind of giving into those. And that's where they really want to spend much more of their time and energy.
And that's a really great example, because my son, you know, he's a Roblox developer, and there's sometimes he'll make, you know, $100 a month. So like that's not something I was doing when I was 11, right? I was definitely not making that kind of cash. So that's really interesting. What might, in your perspective, what might the future hold for the next generation brands and fans with these new technologies at their fingertips? You kind of alluded to it, but any other futuristic foresight looking visions on what these technologies are going to do to brands, but also to fans? Is the era of the, you know, Madison Avenue brand over?
I think for some brands, it will probably remain. It depends on, you know, the audience that they're going after. But I think when we're thinking about next gen brands and the way that they should be thinking, the way that I described it in the multiplayer brand is that a brand will become an emergent ecosystem. And what I mean by that is they still have the parameters. You still have to kind of make sure that you've got control of a brand, because if you don't have control over it, there's no consistency and therefore a brand doesn't exist. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to control everything end to end. So I think that idea of an emergent ecosystem is basically saying we are open to actually stretching in new directions, to getting different bits of feedback from fans, to allowing them to help us co-navigate what the future might look like, or to develop ourselves in a new category, or to explore a brand new virtual world in a different way, or to open up a kind of mutual value economy in which we give them the toolkits, you know, they create the assets and we all prosper, you know, as one. And so I think that idea of mutual value creation is going to be really, really important. So rather than just brands making stuff, distributing it, selling it and making money themselves, it's actually, you know, how do we bring our brands fans in and actually turn these customers into co-creators who can actually make money through us as well. And we're already starting to see that with what Nike are doing with Dot Switch, which I've already mentioned, but also Artifact. Also the way that, you know, Epic are running their marketplace called Fab, where they're basically saying, you know, you keep 88% of the amount of money that you actually make from the assets that you sell. And more, it's because these brands are saying, well, actually, these people have limited time on their hands. They're not going to make assets for our world, for our brand, out of the goodness of their heart or because they're bored. We have to make this economically viable to them, economically attractive to them. Otherwise, how do we create a sticky community which helps us to, you know, further our ends as well?
It's really interesting when I look at the broader entertainment music industry. There's so many headlines and so much attention being put on Hollywood or on, you know, on music. But gaming as a whole is actually bigger than Hollywood and music combined. Why do you think, this is something that's always baffled me, right? Is why do you think that in general, the business world is not taking gaming seriously when 1 in 3 people labels themselves as a gamer in the world? So any thoughts around that?
I think being brutally honest about it, it's because the executives at the top who are making those decisions as to where to invest their time and energy are not themselves playing video games. And if they're not in those spaces, if they're not experimenting with Roblox, with Fortnite, maybe if they don't have children that are playing it, or if they do, they don't sit with them and actually kind of see how these worlds are unfolding. They therefore have those blinkers on, which is, well, I'm not in it personally, and therefore it doesn't exist to me, and therefore it's a niche. Which I think is such a shame and also such a missed opportunity as well. I mean, yes, they're exposed to entertainment. Yes, they're exposed to music. But I think in terms of what's happening in innovation with business models, with fandom models, with world building, with new technologies, it's all happening within gaming at the moment. And if you're not paying attention to that, I think it's a really big miss.
Yeah. And I mean, gaming is culture. That's, you know, I had a very, like, my son is very much a gamer and I'm very immersed in that world. So like, I'm always hearing about all these new games, and it's interesting to see how his generation embraces, you know, gaming. Not so much like the giant franchises they do, but they are about user generated content. They love indie games. Like, they will support these indie games. So it's really interesting to kind of look at that. So Zoe, we're coming towards the end of the interview. Is there anything that you're really interested in right now that you think people should explore? I mean, you've put out some amazing content out there. Anything that you think folks should be reading or should be looking at as they think about the future fandom, the multiplayer brand, like you mentioned, what kind of resources do you think they should go hunt for?
I think first and foremost, it's about getting into those spaces, as I mentioned. You know, if you're not in those spaces, you can't see them existing. That doesn't necessarily mean you need to go and buy yourself a console, but what you can do is you can buy yourself something like a Backbone, you know, clip it onto your phone. It's less than $100, turns your phone into a mini console, and then you can dive into Gucci Town. Or you can go and have a look at Vans World, for example, and just see how other brands are executing in this space and why they're so unbelievably popular. So I think, you know, that's kind of first and foremost. I would be paying real attention to what's happening at the moment in terms of the economies and the communities that are being built around Unreal Engine, but also, you know, the likes of Roblox as well, because without people building on their platforms for their platforms, these businesses cannot grow and they cannot exist. And this is kind of almost the beginning of, you know, the dreaded M word, the metaverse that everyone seems to have hyped up and then killed. I don't think it's dead at all. I think it's absolutely still growing. And I think it's, you know, again, very, very short-sighted for people to kind of go, oh, it's over. When we're actually really in the nascent stages. And actually, you know, Tim Sweeney, the founder of Epic, had a brilliant tweet a couple of months ago when he sort of said, you know, let's have a massive morning party for the 600, million people, for example, taking part in the metaverse on and off. And so again, I think we just need to be paying attention to that and seeing how they're actually unfolding. And I think with these new economies, these new ways of giving people creator tools, giving them autonomy and license to explore their own narratives, their own ideas, that essentially is giving us a new blueprint for what a brand could be and should be in the near future.
I love that. And this leads me to like my last question, truly my last one. I could talk to you for hours, but basically, you know, a lot of the work I'm doing right now, or a lot of time I'm spending on spatial computing, thinking about the Apple Vision Pro, you know, the post-smartphone future, right? There's the Humane AI pin that comes out November 9th. There's all these things about what comes after the mobile phone. What are your thoughts around, you know, this post-smartphone future? Any thoughts around it?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we're entering into is what people are calling ambient computing, which is this idea of, you know, essentially, you know, the metaverse or computing being able to be used in any context and almost not necessarily noticing that you have a device that is doing some work for you in the background. You know, whether it's wearing a pair of smart glasses, for example, and you simply just sort of saying, you know, find me an organic pizza restaurant in my vicinity, or, you know, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning when I'm home, or give me a recipe based on the stuff that I've got in my fridge right now, or looking into the mirror that might have a device built in saying, you know, my skin looks shit today. What's the best makeup look for me to go for? So that idea of, you know, ambient computing is computing coming into our everyday to such an extent that it's not noticeable, but it's leveling up our quality of life or our quality of knowledge or our ability to connect dots in different ways. And I think that's a really exciting thing to look out for, whether it's smart glasses, you know, whether it's the Apple Vision Pro, whether it's some sort of, you know, cochlear implant, God knows. But I think that really paying attention to the fact that we're going to be moving away from screens into something that feels more all around us, I think is going to be something that probably will happen in the next 5 to 10 years.
Fantastic. And for folks that are listening to this and want to, you know, read your content, connect, what's the best way for them to find you and connect with you and get your content?
Probably the best way is on Twitter. So it's just at Zoe Skamen on Twitter. And I've got links there to my Substack, which is incredibly infrequent at the moment, but I'm trying to kind of put more stuff out. But it's just about finding time while trying to consume all of the stuff that's happening in the world.
Thank you so much for being on Tech Magic.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So that was an amazing interview with Zoe, I think she's fantastic. She's brilliant. I think the idea and the concept of the multiplayer brand is on point, you know, and yeah, just I think brands need to evolve in their thinking, especially when it comes to community, when it comes to approaching Gen Alpha and Gen Z and co-creating, collaborating. Lee, any thoughts on how you see the future of brands? Because I think brand as a term is evolving, whether it's multiplayer brand, the multiplayer brand concept or not, but just in general.
Yeah, I mean, especially when it comes to gaming and multiplayer experiences, and you and I've had many conversations about this. I liken it back to the Future. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite all-time movies. All three, the entire trilogy is great. But what makes that series work is there's so many brand placements that don't feel forced, mm-hmm. right? Like what would Back to the Future 2 be without the Mattel hoverboard or the auto lacing Nikes or the Black and Decker pizza maker that was a dehydrated Pizza Hut? Like, it was,
or the
it was
DeLorean
those, or the DeLorean or any of it, right? Like, there's so many little brands that, even in like where they go back to the Wild West, there's a Frisbee brand for the Frisbee. You know, so
watched all three with my kids, so I love it.
But it is that a tasteful brand placement that makes the reality of that movie series real. And I think that is often what is missing in video games. I can't tell you how many times I go into a video game and you see that knockoff Coca-Cola label on a can of like Coke of soda, and it's just fake a cola sitting in there, and it's a power up and you need it, and you're like, what a missed opportunity, and this feels very out of place. You know, and I'm gonna get people who disagree with me on that, but I don't see it as advertisement. I see it as brand placement, but I also see it as a highlight of those games becoming more recognizable as real life, right? Like, the blurring that line. I think there's a tasteful way of doing those type of things without it just being like a big billboard in front of your eyes.
Well, and I think just like the brand world, the ad world, they're evolving and changing. Like, the old playbook out the door, the days of Madison Avenue, like the Mad Men days, toast. Long gone. This is going to change a lot. So anyway, our producer, Lily Snyder, is not feeling well today to do the Dispatch from the Fringe, so she won't be joining us for that. She did send us a story that we're going to share very briefly about a Spanish agency that has, this is what it says. A Spanish agency became so sick of models and influencers that they created their own with AI, and she's raking in up to $11,000 a month. So this is an agency called Clueless, based out of Spain, that created an AI influencer called Aitana. She's like a 25-year-old AI model / influencer. They're, you know, booking campaigns. Sometimes she's bringing in like $1,000 a month. It says created with just enough imperfection to look real. She does look very beautiful, right? But it's very interesting that was their take, right?
I thought she was real until I read the article. And I didn't, like, on the headline with the picture, I actually didn't put it together until I read it. I just, like, this headline doesn't make sense. Like, oh, that does make sense. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Because it's one of those areas where it's like, this does not have a hint of Uncanny Valley. Even AI pictures of people still have that, like, I don't know, there's like a tone to it that you can still tell if you've looked at enough AI images to be like, yeah, that's a really good looking picture. It's like, it's almost too polished.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's even like with Little Michaela, because I mean, I follow Little Michaela, Shudu. What's the one from Brazil? I can't remember her name right now, but she's got millions and she's got more followers than Little Michaela. You can still tell, right? There's a little bit there, but with Aitana, I was like, this is really interesting. So we'll have to see. I mean, it's fringy. I mean, it's nothing new because Little Michaela's been around for a long time, you know, et cetera.
I just love the fact that they called out why they did it. That's why it's fringy, because someone needed to say some of these influencers, their personalities are toxic and really they're just not worth the investment. Like, someone's got to say it. And then they financially proved it. Like, your attitude is not worth the investment here. So,
well, she's more of a micro influencer. Like, she's not like, you know, Michaela, like, who has millions, or the one from Brazil that has more, even more. So, we'll have to see. I mean, I think we'll continue to see this evolving. But she's raking in lots of dough. So
it's not the first time we've seen it happen. It won't be the last. Mm-hmm. We've had Ronald McDonald and we had Avoid the Noid, you know, true? Like these
brand spokespeople who are mascots. They're called mascots in that case. But I don't know. We'll see. Anyway. So Lily, hope you get better. This was our little attempt at Dispatch from the Fringe. Not as great as what she does, but it's all good. And anyway, I'm heading to Apple. Very excited.
I won't ask you any questions when you get back.
I will not talk about it.
I'm still going to ask. You're just going to have to tell me.
We'll be back next week. Like I say every week, come for the tech, stay for the magic. And Lee, thanks for joining me today.
Every time. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you. So thanks to everyone for listening. Please subscribe, review, share the podcast. We are thrilled for all the feedback we're getting. And we'll be back next week. with some more amazing stories and some more tech magic.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.